Entrepreneurship, leadership, and free market capitalism. You are listening to Kyle Keegan.
Welcome back to the Kyle Keegan Radio Show, where we are bringing producer-centered radio to your favorite podcasting apps. What is this show about? We are here to bring out the very best in entrepreneurs, and that means we make way more than a living. It means we build things that are bigger than just us and our own efforts. It means we embrace entrepreneurs and the value that they bring to the world. We believe that entrepreneurship is a high calling here and an honorable pursuit. Our own efforts are finite, but our businesses can be infinite. The world's resources are available to good leaders, and it's our job to be those good leaders. It's what we're doing here. We're building leaders. We're building great entrepreneurs. We're encouraging everyone, and we're also getting in that narrative, right? That narrative that CEOs are bad and that rich people are bad. On the contrary, they build the future. They make our life better. If they are engaged in actual capitalism, that means that we chose their products. We chose their services. We breathed life into whatever it was that they created. So they might be the creator, but we give it life, ladies and gentlemen, as the market. And then if you're an entrepreneur, of course, you're the creator and the market breathes life into what you create. It's an amazing cycle, and it is what makes our lives so much better than 500 years ago. It's the only thing. It's creators and leaders that took big problems upon themselves and did something about it. It's why we have plumbing. It's why we have electricity. It's why we have cars. It's why we have multiple cars per family. Work gets completed better and better as the world improves over time. The more work that gets completed for the average human day, the better off we all are as civilization. It's crazy like that, ladies and gentlemen. Having created great wealth then means that we created great value, an option chosen above the alternatives by our customers, investors, and employees. Our value creation is absolutely improving lives. Want to interact with the show? You can text 713-528-8219. Telegram, for those of you who do not have a U.S. phone number, Twitter, and KeeganRadio.com. If you're getting great value out of the show, the only thing I ask is that you give us your 5-star reviews and also share episodes of the show with your friends. Thank you for listening and being who you are. You guys are value creators, not just listeners of my show, not just something that I like to access from time to time. It's not about me. It's about what you guys are bringing to the world. And I appreciate you guys from a standpoint so much bigger than just being a listener to the show. Welcome to episode 305. I hope you guys really enjoyed that episode with Tyler Bates. It's a hot seat episode. It's the new thing we're doing here on the Kyle Keegan Radio Show. We are building each other up, okay? The reason for that episode is not just to put one guy on the spot and make entertaining content. The reason for that show is to have all of us take a look at our businesses and apply similar types of thinking. It is an exercise in excellence. We want to better ourselves no matter what we are. I wonder if that type of episode even applied to somebody in a totally different industry, maybe selling to totally different customers. Maybe they pulled something out of that that had absolutely nothing to do with retail products. Perhaps that was the case. The point here is to apply critical thinking to our businesses and improve them to the best of our ability. And most of this stuff, what you'll notice if you've listened to that episode yet, and you should go back and listen to it if you haven't already, what you will notice is that a lot of this stuff is probably things that you already knew, probably things that you maybe could have landed on yourself. The difference is, I think we as the leaders of our organizations and we as the entrepreneurs of our businesses and the CEOs, we get tunnel vision. We only see things through our own eyes. But if you apply the logic of somebody from the outside who doesn't see the barriers that you might see, you may start to see ways around the barriers that you see. So having a way to get rid of that tunnel vision, that is pretty much the point of the hot seat episodes of the Kyle Keegan Radio Show. We are going to circle back around with Tyler in about a month. Where we left it is he had a couple of big action items to try to accomplish before he committed to coming back on the show and discussing what has unfolded over the last month versus what had unfolded under the prior, however many, several months, perhaps years, that he has been running that company. And that's kind of the story for all of our companies. There is a set of things that we could potentially do in the next 30 days that will gain us more than the previous year has ever gotten us. There are a set of action items that you could potentially uncover and potentially do that would have that significant effect on our companies. So it's our job as leaders to try to discover what those are. What are those action items? And be a force of nature and go after them. And act so hard that discouragement can't even find its way into your mindset. That there is no room for discouragement because there's just too much work being performed. And even if it's not making you anything, it doesn't matter. There's just too much work being performed. There's a set of things, ladies and gentlemen, that you could be doing, that I could be doing, that we all could be doing, that would gain us more in the next 30 days than we've seen in the last year. There just is. That's almost how it always works. It's what is that principle where you work 80% of the time on 10% of the crap, and then you work the 10% of the time on the 80% of the... That kind of thing. The important stuff, like huge business progress, it happens when you make leaps. And sometimes these leaps, these uncomfortable leaps that you make, are things that don't take a whole bunch of time, but have a massive effect. Anyway, I want to extend the invitation to other listeners of the Kyle Keegan Radio Show. If you want to sit in the hot seat, I thank Tyler for being the first. If you want to sit in the hot seat in the future, get in touch with me. Text that number, that 713-528-8219, or get in touch with me on Telegram. The links are in the description. It does come with some back-end support from me, being able to chat with me a little bit on the backside if you've got questions about what we discussed on the show. And as you could tell from that episode, it was all about help. It was all about making this better. It was not about embarrassing people. It was not about asking gotcha journalism questions. It's not what we're here to do. We're here to make things better. We're here to build, not get laughs or point at people. Okay, this isn't the Wolf of Wall Street podcast where he just wants to, you know, gain all of his listeners that he possibly can by bashing Grant Cardone, who happens to be an intelligent, albeit a little bit annoying sometimes, business guy. We don't play that game here. It's about growth. It's about betterment. It's not about superiority. Anyway, today we're getting into market economics a little bit. I hear everybody going around blaming certain people for inflation. Oh my gosh, it's Vladimir Putin's fault. Oh my gosh, it's Biden's fault. You know, you see the little stickers at the gas station. I did that, pointing right there. You know, a lot of these things are partially true, and a lot of these things, they don't see the full picture. I want my listeners to see the full picture. You guys know whose actual fault this is? I'm going to get to that. The other day, I was on Twitter, okay, and CNBC was posting a blame article about inflation, something or other, somebody did something, and of course, it's never our American politicians or our Federal Reserve. No, of course not. It's something else that's causing inflation, and I commented in this CNBC thread underneath that article, and I basically said, CNBC is now a mouthpiece for the Federal Reserve. They're a mouthpiece for central banking, for some guy in a suit molesting our money. Instead of a very clear, superior potential money supply, something that is controlled by supply and demand of an actual free market, no, we somehow need some central force, some king of the economy, to control our money supply for this to work properly. They don't even see the other side of the equation. So I made a comment. I made a comment that, yes, you're the mouthpiece of the central banks. Yes, all of that. But I also made the comment that we should throw John Maynard Keynes into the Grand Canyon, which promptly got me banned for, quote, inciting violence. Yes, that's what I said. It was obviously a joke, right? Because those of you who listen to my show, you do understand that John Maynard Keynes is long gone. That dude has not been around for a long time. I think he died in the 1940s, okay? He is the economist to end all economists as far as these central banking idiots are concerned. So if somebody's going around saying it's so-and-so's fault, it's Putin's fault, it's Biden's fault, it's Trump's fault, it's Obama's, whoever's fault, it's Trudeau's fault. Well, that's only partially true, because you want to know whose real fault it is? It's John Maynard freaking Keynes, ladies and gentlemen. The man was a very evil man, and I will get started on this a little bit. I want to explain to you who John Maynard Keynes is, and you're going to think, oh, Kyle, you're just a conspiracy theorist. This guy doesn't have that much pull in the world today, yada, yada. Ladies and gentlemen, go take an economics class at a university anywhere. Pick a university, take an economics class. Okay, if it's micro, you're going to learn about supply and demand and natural forces in an economy. Okay, but you take macro, and the first idiot you are going to learn about is John Maynard Keynes. Without fail, this is the first guy you are going to learn about, because he is the foundation and the building blocks that all of our central banking crap has been built upon. Okay, I'll give you a little bit of an idea of the stewardship and the care that goes into his economic theory here. Okay, he literally is quoted in saying, in the long run, we are all dead. So basically, who cares what we do today? Right? That was the implication. Who cares what we do today? In the long run, we are all dead. The dude died in the 1940s, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are having to pick up the pieces of rubble that were created by a mindset from back in the 40s that says, in the long run, we're all dead anyway. Think about that. We're now the living people, not the dead people from way back when who said, in the long run, we're all dead. You can't keep saying that, because eventually we're the great-great-grandkids, ladies and gentlemen. We are the people who have to deal with the mistakes of the past. We're going to talk about just kind of the general idea that he had. Okay, during his work, there was an awful lot of concern about employment. Okay, if you look that he died in the 1940s, you'll see that he lived through the Great Depression and all of that kind of stuff. He was an English economist, so he wasn't in the States. Maybe he moved to the States. I don't know about that. I just know he's an English economist. Anyway, he had a lot of concern about employment and having full employment. Okay, and his idea for full employment, it absolutely works. So a lot of people will say, well, you know, Keynes was right, right? And that's proof that Keynes was right. And I always say there's a cause and effect to everything. Okay, there's a cause and effect relationship. It's not just a one-off transaction. A perfect example would be minimum wage, right? We'll raise minimum wage, and therefore the people who are currently earning minimum wage will get paid more money. That is like a Keynes-level statement right there. There is no exploration in the effects beyond that, right? Oh, minimum wage is $8. We'll raise it to $10. That means everybody, with my math as John Maynard Keynes, will make $2 more per hour, right? And everyone will just go home $2 happier. Like, there is no afterthought. There's no thinking about the implication of what happens after that and the negative effects that will likely have on the very people that happen to be earning the minimum wage. Now, it's not a minimum wage discussion. In this case, it was an inflation discussion. He believed that with stimulus and the central control of a currency, that you could devalue the currency and because of that end up employing more people. Okay, now let's think of that in terms of how that works. Okay, so I'm paying five employees, $100,000 a year. I've got a $500,000 payroll in this example. Okay, and let's say they devalue the currency by 20% over a certain amount of years. It's looking like that happens about every 2 years in the United States right now, perhaps even less. Okay, devalue the currency by 20%. The implication is that my prices would have risen as well. So I've got my $500,000 payroll, and now my prices are likely having risen another 20% because, of course, the value of the currency has gone down 20%. So you've got to make it up. You've got to be able to make more money because my suppliers, for instance, are going to be charging me more. So I've got to charge more as well. So all of a sudden, I have record revenues. And that's what you're seeing in the stock market. You'll see record revenues. But what else are you seeing right now pop in? Last week, we had some retail numbers come in. Record revenues, of course. But what are we seeing? Really bad profits. Why? Because the internal structure of those businesses haven't caught up with this higher price revenue structure that they're working with. Okay, these are very multifaceted businesses where you're trying to figure out the best way to make it all work. If there is an instability there, it makes it just that much harder to run that business. Anyway, so we've seen bad profits and high revenues. Okay, so these businesses in this example, my business where I've got the $500,000 payroll here. Now I've raised my prices because the value of the dollar has come down. I've got this extra capacity now because I have now additional money coming into my company for the same amount of crap that I've always been selling, right? If it's measured in dollars, more dollars are coming in for the same amount of crap that I've always sold. Now, what can I do? I can afford more labor. Okay, I can hire somebody else and we can try to grow this thing. And that was his idea, right? So you devalue the currency and you keep people employed because if you keep devaluing the currency, they're going to keep freeing up resources to be able to hire people. Okay, but who is that at the expense of? The people with a fixed income that are likely not to get raises in the future, right? So the three or five or whatever, yeah, the five people who are working for me for 100 grand a piece, their 100 grand doesn't go as far anymore. They were with me a couple of years and their 100 grand isn't going nearly as far at all. So it is robbing the people who have been employed to serve the people who are unemployed. So it was an exercise in employment structure, and it's just a manipulation. Because what we know is when the government applies some kind of force somewhere, something else happens. It's like one of those little stress balls, and you squeeze it. If you squeeze it in one place, it gets bigger in another place. You know, there's something going to happen. There's always a cause and effect there. So I take it, being someone who considered himself an economist, he knew that, right? He knew that the people who worked currently were going to be robbed to pay for these other folks. He knew that, but his number that he was concerned with was the job market. And if he could show progress in the job market, that's the only metric that the average idiot person was going to care about. Yes, we've implemented the John Maynard Keynes protocol, and look at the results, ladies and gentlemen. So many more people employed. But what about the people who were retired? What about the people who had savings, right? And that savings begins to dwindle by a large chunk every single freaking year. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you know this, but in the last 100 years, the U.S. dollar has been devalued 98%, right? The dollar has lost 98% of its value in the last 100 years. Think about that. That's absolutely maddening. A dollar would go as far back 100 years ago as $100 might go today. That's crazy stuff, but it's all because of the building blocks that this guy put out there. But let's talk about another cause and effect relationship that he brought on. Okay, so who is going to be the person that we trust with this power to erode our buying power, a power to devalue the currency in order to support the employment markets. And you watch this play out. So this is kind of perfect. COVID comes to town and you watch this play out, this process of high stimulus, pumping money, making things go crazy. And then you've got a hot rod stock market and people spending money like they never have before. They devalued the currency. You watched this unfold just recently, their response to try to keep people employed and all of this kind of stuff. And now you're seeing the effect, right? That was the cause. Yeah, we're going to build people up and people need this and yada, yada. All of this kind of stuff that they put on the surface. And then today you're seeing what the repercussions are of the whole deal. The stock market's down like 35% or something this year. I don't know. I've got a bunch of gold and oil, so I'm doing fine. But the fact of the matter is, you are now seeing what happens later on. So in the long run, we're all dead. That long run's getting a hell of a lot shorter. I'm going to make a claim here that the long run, I don't know that we're all going to be dead anymore. I don't know that long run is too damn far away anymore. So who did he go about talking to about all of these different theories? This John Maynard Keynes, where did he go? Well, of course, the people who he wanted to take the most notice were, of course, the people in charge of their countries, right? So these are countries that so-called capitalist countries, the countries of the West, the ones that have embraced economic freedom and all of this kind of stuff. He wanted them to take notice. And yes, of course, they did, because what John Maynard Keynes was able to do for these countries was give them a great excuse to own the cookie jar. Okay, so here is the money supply that we have backed by, and back then it was, we've backed by a commodity that is controlled by supply and demand. That is a true capitalist economy. Your means of exchange is just as much a supply and demand driven metric as anything else in the market. That is the utopia of economic freedom. And now you've got this John Maynard Keynes. Well, we could have more employment. You know, we could make employment a little bit better here if we just do this, this, and this, and this. Okay. And now they have a cause to stand on. So the government show up to the party and they start talking about employment numbers. And they get people really wrapped around the axle about employment numbers. Oh, employment this, employment that. It wasn't something that had been previously like talked about to that extent. It was not something that was such a massive, like today we live and die on the labor figures. You know, CNBC comes out, the mouthpiece of the central bank, and they talk about labor figures. Okay. Now they've got a cause to hang their hat on. And you know what it does? It allows them to own the cookie jar. And you know what the government gets to do then when they own this cookie jar? So they add more cookies to the jar. They're allowed to add more. Okay. But you want to know what they're doing at the same time? They're simultaneously shoving them in their mouths, ladies and gentlemen. Some of them miss the jar completely. They're just taking these cookies and they're jamming them down their throats, right? Because now that the government owns the damn cookie jar and they're going to, you know, create all of this new money out of nowhere, right? They're just going to consume some of it on the way. Look at it this way. If you were to devalue the currency and not steal, right? The government was just simply not going to steal some of the new printed dollars out of the cookie jar, right? Then we'd all just have more dollars. And so our dollars would be worth less money and we would all just be spending more dollars for each thing, and we'd all just be making more dollars for the work that we perform, right? But instead, there's that external factor there. They're adding more dollars to the money supply, and they're consuming without producing, okay? So there's more dollars that represent not just no additional production, but also consumption. So you've got dollars that are created purely for consumption purposes. That is where the problem lies. Consumption without production creates massive freaking problems. So you might say, hey, Kyle, the central bank is separate from the government. They're, you know, supposed to be separate entities and all of this, and privately owned. You'll hear privately owned. Well, you know, when was the last time the president appointed the director of a privately owned business? I'll wait. They don't, right? It's not really privately owned. Though the Treasury Secretary and the chairman of the Fed probably talk on the phone daily. I mean, that would be my guess. They are probably the most closely related positions in Washington, ladies and gentlemen. And every single, the European Central Bank, the Canadian Central Bank, all of these different central banks, it's the same deal. It is a mirage. It's a cause. They've said, this helps the labor markets. We're helping. Yeah, you're helping, but you're robbing people at the same time. And such is a lot of left-wing policies. But the point I'm trying to make here is that these were once capitalist countries, countries that were going out of their way to find everything free markets that they possibly could and embrace that type of free market thinking. Like even in the currency, when they had sound money, you know, money linked to gold, ladies and gentlemen, that was a thing that happened. Right? Why? Because people, at least when they put that into place, knew that you couldn't just trust one clown in a suit to control your money supply. You can't just give somebody the damn cookie jar. No one person can have it. The market, however, can handle it. It's the most democratic way to handle it, not elect somebody with their hand in the cookie jar. No, you're literally voting with dollars. The market votes with their dollars. It votes with where resources flow, what companies are going to get big, what companies are going to fail. Why? Because the market chooses the winners and losers, and it's the most democratic process there is. It's way more democratic than a voting situation where people vote for a person who's going to appoint a chairman of a Federal Reserve. Give me a break. Voting with your dollars is the most efficient way for the right things to continue to exist and the wrong things to go away. The problem is convincing people of this just easy truth to understand is so difficult, especially when you've got companies like CNBC perpetuating the central bank narrative. There should be at least one person on CNBC that questions the central bank in general, but there isn't. So they've all sold their souls to John Maynard Keynes. Yeah, he was right, and we're all wrong. We don't fight the Fed. You know, they're always laughing and smiling about don't fight the Fed. Well, maybe you should fight the existence of the Fed. Maybe you should say this is bogus. This guy has his hand in the cookie jar. He's pulling the cookies out and he's throwing them to his buddies in Washington. And every time he freaking does that, it robs the American people. And every time the European Central Bank does that, it robs the European people, and the Canadians, and all these Western countries that call themselves capitalist countries. They have this system. Which brings me to my final point, which is it isn't capitalist to do this. This isn't a mainstay required part of a capitalist economy. It isn't. It has absolutely nothing to do with capitalism. As a matter of fact, it is how you disguise socialism as capitalism to someone who hasn't thought it through, right? You have, ladies and gentlemen, if you are in the United States or you're in Europe or you're in Canada, you operate under socialism. Ladies and gentlemen, it is absolutely still socialism. It's just socialism that's more palatable for the people. And the people think we live under capitalism. And then they complain, right? They complain about the elites, the people who are recipients of the damn cookies that are being pulled out of the cookie jar. They complain that those people keep getting richer. And we need socialism to solve it, when in fact it's a socialist process that enriched some of these idiots in the first place. But don't worry, American citizen, we're watching out for your labor numbers while we rob you blind without you looking. right? Let's all start looking. Ladies and gentlemen, at least the listeners of this show can look in the right direction. So I am going to make a big claim here. You go around and you watch all your favorite news channels. You watch your least favorite news channels. They blame Putin. They blame Trump. They blame Biden. You go to the gas pump and there's stickers that said, I did that. And it's Joe Biden. And as much as I cannot stand the man or his politics or his belief in all of his different economic central controls, the father of all of this problem is John Maynard Keynes. Okay. And that entire school of economics, the school of economics that says, who cares? We're all going to die anyway. Seriously, that's what he says. We'll prime the pump now because later on when that thing dries up, who gives a crap? We'll be dead. Right? That is the mindset that our entire world, our Western civilization, is living under. This one man and his stupid economic theories. So you know what I'm going to call it? When you work for not your own benefit, right? You got to bear with me here, because if you're a simpleton like John Maynard Keynes followers, you might not get this. If you only work for someone else's benefit, the only reason you're doing this is for somebody else to benefit, you are a slave, right? So you're working hard and you benefit none out of it, except maybe they won't hurt you or kill you, right? You are a slave. That's a pretty good definition of a slave. You're working for someone else's benefit. You and I get up, we do some work. We are generally working for our benefit, our family's benefit. We want to be able to work for ourselves, and we want to be able to put things in the bank, savings, buy bigger houses, buy cars, whatever. The reason we're working is to increase our resources, and we do get to be recipients of the work of our hands. But under this system, we know that, number one, we're taxed at a certain level, and number two, we are also robbed of our buying power that we do get to keep. 98% of it every 100 years. If we stay on the same trend that we've been on, I believe that it will escalate even faster. Probably 98% every 6-7 years. That'd be my guess at this point. So what do you call it when, yes, you get to work for your own benefit, but your own benefits are shrinking, and the benefits of the guy with his hand in the cookie jar and all of his people that he hands cookies out to that don't happen to be you, you know, you may get a crumb every once in a while, but they're handing them out to all these other people, and then you're also taxed at a pretty high level. You're working for somebody else. I call this, ladies and gentlemen, fractional slavery. Okay. We're at least partially working for somebody else's benefit. It's something that we don't want to do. And there is a threat to our health, right? You're a slave in slavery times. There was a threat of harm upon you if you did not do what they said. And that was the only motivation for these slaves to work, right? They were doing it for somebody else. Yes, they were fed, or else they would have died, you know, and many did. But the reason why they worked is because there was a threat of bodily harm, right? There is a portion of our work today that must be turned over to these people because there's a threat of bodily harm. If you take it to its logical destination, they'll harm you physically. They'll put you in prison. If you don't go willingly, what happens, ladies and gentlemen? There is that threat of harm if you don't participate in their fractional slavery scheme. So I'll wrap this up by saying John Maynard Keynes is really the father of fractional slavery. He is the father of making slavery look like it isn't slavery. Okay. And in my opinion, that's where value goes to die. That is where things don't improve. The improvement all happens on the side you get to keep. The part that we do for ourselves, the profit motive that we have, is what creates the, you know, advancements in our human condition, our advancements in standard of living, and why our lives are so much more wealthy, at least, than 500-600 years ago. Imagine if we weren't fractional slaves. Ladies and gentlemen, imagine where our civilization would be today if it wasn't for the clown in a suit with his hands in the cookie jar, doling them out and making more of them and laughing and chortling as they enrich one another in their circles, and we are all working for their benefit. So yeah, John Maynard Keynes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a fan. Ultimately, I did get my Twitter back because there were a few of you who went after Twitter about it. Like, how stupid are you, Twitter, or your bots? Like, this guy has been dead for however long. He wasn't threatening violence on an already dead person. Like, it was just a figure of speech. We should throw all of him and his ideas in the Grand Canyon. Like, get rid of this nonsense. But hey, that's not the popular thing. That's not the thing that floats around. If you go pick up a book in the economics section of, you know, Amazon, it's not going to talk about supply and demand. It's going to talk about central banking. You're going to see books from people like Ben Bernanke. You know, those are the people you're going to hear from. You're not going to see stuff about sound money. You're not going to see stuff from Ludwig von Mises. Why? Because this has just been a perpetuated lie to steal from people. Anyway, it is something that we should understand. And he is an evil man. He is the father of stealing from people without these people even knowing. He's awful. So I needed to attack this guy. I needed to have it on the books. At least I am going to be part of the opposition against this thing that will never win. Right? We will never win the argument. But, ladies and gentlemen, there's a reason why I have gold. Right? Because gold is still a supply and demand driven commodity. Right? Gold isn't something they can go print. Yeah, you can mine for it, but there's a market for that too. Right? There's a supply and demand equilibrium for how much mining is done. Right? So there's a stability there as well that's driven by a market. So the whole thing is better than these idiot currencies. So that's why I've always been a big gold investor. It's why I'm trying to opt out of at least the fractional slavery that is owning dollars, right? I don't want piece of crap dollars. That is the trap, right? That's the worst investment ever. You used to be able to put money in a savings account and make money back. But here we are. We're here living in the long run that John Maynard Keynes wasn't real worried about because he'd be dead. And he, in fact, is. Therefore, what I said on Twitter wasn't a threat, obviously. Anyway, I did get my Twitter back thanks to some great listeners of the show, so all is good over there. Follow it if you haven't already. Check the show notes on the way out for social media and links. Thank you for supporting the show and being a part of our movement up the charts. Join the progress thread at thefastlaneforum.com. God bless you guys. Entrepreneurs like you build the future. Have a fantastic rest of your day and stay tuned for our next episode. Until next time, keep building amazing things despite the fractional slavery.